continued our coverage of the 2025 NRA annual meetings in Atlanta, Georgia. I am very pleased to have with us on the program right now, NRA First Vice President Bill Bockenberg. Bill, thank you so much for your time today. I know you're a very busy guy this weekend.
That's an understatement, but Cam, so great to be with you. You're a rock star.
Well, listen, I really appreciate that. And I think, you know, you're a rock star too, I got to say. Tell us a little bit of background for folks who are not aware of your bio and your past with the NRA and the Second Amendment.
Well, I can't fit 66 years into 2 minutes, right? But a little background. I mean, I grew up on a farm. When I got out of high school, I went into farming. Farmed corn, grain, soybeans. And like a lot of farmers, had some luck here with a drought in 1979, Jimmy Carter's grain embargo of government interference, and another drought. And I started taking some night courses at a community college and got into computers and technology.
Really?
So I was known as the farmer, you know, and everyone says, hey, you know this guy from, you know, and that time I lived in New Jersey, you know, this guy that was a farmer, he's playing with computers now. And I says, well, yeah, you're talking to him. So it was interesting. But, you know, I tell a lot of people, I was 33 years with the company I founded. And we changed that company 5 times, major change, or we wouldn't have survived. Because we started out with punch cards, right? And you had no green screens, no PCs, no servers, PCs. And we went through all those realms up until finally at the end there, we were the largest regional hosting company. We did computer hosting for 100 hospitals, financial service firms, life or death, mission critical applications. And, you know, I consider myself a change agent because if you don't change, and it's hard, right? We all get up in the morning, we brush our teeth the same way, we buy the same car, most likely. We're creatures of habit. So to change is you got to see things in a different light.
Yeah. Well, and do you see yourself as a change agent on the NRA board?
Absolutely. I've tried for years, and, you know, it just fell on deaf ears. It was funny because I'd come home from meetings, and my wife would be, you know, how was your meeting? And she already knew, right?
Yeah.
Because I had the technology background, right? I had other areas, marketing, strategic planning, finance, and I was really never utilized for many years in that capability. And, you know, it finally came to a head last year as I wasn't planning to run again for the board. I was just very frustrated. And, you know.
So how do you go from, I don't think I'm going to run again, to now being the first vice president, being in line to become the president of the NRA?
Well, now you can affect change, right? Is that's the key. I mean, we've got so many great board members that if we all work together, and that's one of my visions, is we unify the board again, we will be exponentially more powerful because we have good people. And what we need to do is we can disagree and then come back and shake hands and says, okay, what's the best for the organization? Put the friendships aside, put the pet peeves aside. We're here for one purpose, and that's to save the Second Amendment and to provide our core mission of education, training, competition. I mean, we got to get back to our core. We sort of lost our way a little bit, trying to be too many things to too many that doesn't have a return.
Yeah, you know, I think that's part of it. But the other part of it, too, is, let's face it, right? It was the private jets. It was the expensive suits. It was, you know, this feeling that, okay, I'm sending my membership dollars, and I'm hoping that they're going to be spent on lawsuits. I'm hoping they're going to be spent on competitive shooting, bringing people into the fold. I'm not feeling like I'm getting my money's worth. Doug Hamill has been, you know, really open and out front about, hey, you know what, we're flying coach, you know, we're staying at the Fairfield Inn. I think that there's been a change at the top and a change in attitude. Do you see that from your position as the first vice president?
There is a change. There absolutely is. You know, I'm part of the blame, right? I was on the board since 2003, right? And I didn't do enough due diligence on my own. I was fed. I was told what we're doing, how we're doing it. Everything's great, right? And, you know, you can always look back and be Monday morning quarterback. And, you know, now you see little things that, like, that wasn't quite right, right? The suit thing is insane, right? I struggle myself because I don't want to be wearing this suit because I'm not, I want to be approachable. I'm not on a pedestal. I'm a member. I'm a gun owner. I'm a range owner. I want to be approachable. And I've been doing some testing. I went to Friends NRA dinner on Tuesday night. And I wore blue jeans and a shirt. And everyone came up and talked to you. I went to another one and I wore a jacket and nobody came up to me.
Really?
You know, so I understand the respect of the position we're in.
Right.
And there's maybe the appropriate time. But I feel we need to be approachable. I want members to come up to us. I want to listen to what's on their mind because we can't fix the problems. And I've done that a lot in the last couple of weeks. I've done some of my own surveys to understand what our donors are concerned with, what our members are concerned with. And there's stuff out in social media that's flat disinformation for other purposes. I mean, we've done so much as a board from compliance, from safeguards, from whistleblower, that the pendulum has almost swung too far the other way, that it interferes a little bit with what you can do and you know, party transactions among us or what we can and can't do. Mm-hmm. So I'm very, very happy with where we're at right now as a board. We've got discipline. Leadership at NRA is under the microscope, where we know we have a compliance officer that reports to the board, not to the CEO. And they investigate everything. There are no games playing. We're reporting tomorrow to our members. Any first-class travel, any charter travel, any major complaints, the top 10 expenses we have.
Okay.
So, you know, we're being much more transparent. And when myself and some of the other officers ran last year, we ran on a platform of transparency,
yep,
trust, and trust, accountability. And so I view that in everything. And we've gotten much more training on the board of what our responsibilities are to New York nonprofit law, fiduciary responsibility, duty of care, duty of loyalty, that we're now personally liable for a lot of things. So I'm trying to be more open with the board. I'm communicating more with what's going on. And that's our duty as the officers. And if we can get this board to be a very cohesive board, we're on top of the world. And I think we can do that. It's going to take some work. There's some hard feelings out there. There's some disagreements. But we're all there for the same reason.
Yeah. You know, Amanda Subical, I was talking to earlier today, and she said the same thing. You know, she said, I don't really want to put labels on things. I'm not here to throw shade, you know, at anybody. She's like, you know, there are areas of disagreement, but, you know, everybody on that board genuinely cares about the Second Amendment. They genuinely care about the NRA. And, you know, I think that is it's a good attitude to have going forward because, you know, this is the 154th annual meeting, right? And we want to make sure that there is a 155th and a 160th, a 175th. This organization is bigger than any one member. It's bigger than any one officer, right? Bigger than any one staff. And, you know, rebuilding that trust and, again, showing that accountability, I think, hopefully is going to go a long way towards making members feel like they can trust this organization, right?
I like to say is actions speak louder than words. Like, we can talk all about trust. We can talk our accountability, transparency. We've got to show it, right? We've got to build that trust back that, you know, your word's your word. You're going to do this. You're going to be great stewards of the donations. You're going to be great stewards of our membership. And we are. I mean, as officers now, I've got to sign off on any contract, any expense over $100,000. I read every contract. I question, why are we doing this? Can we buy it cheaper? Can we go to somebody else? Because that's our job. We have a fiduciary responsibility, not only because of New York nonprofit law, but because of our members have put trust in us.
Absolutely.
So, you know, I want to be able to walk this hall and says, Phil, thank you. You did a great job. We trust you. Because without that, we don't have an organization. And I think where you were going too is it's really more than the Second Amendment and the country. It's for the free world. Because if the United States loses its Second Amendment rights, our gun rights, the free world loses their freedoms. We're their last bastion.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's got a much higher, I don't know what the word is right now, but weight on your shoulders that the organization has to thrive, has to be better than ever. And I had come up with a slogan last year when I was elected, 10 by 30. And everyone says, oh, that's a great scope. And I said, no, it's 10 million members by 2030. And I believe we can do that as soon as we bring back the trust. And a lot of things ILA's doing, I mean, you look at all the Supreme Court cases we've won. Mm-hmm. Without those Supreme Court cases, they're now going after the states. I mean, look at Massachusetts, look at Colorado, even in Pennsylvania, they're starting to come after us in Pennsylvania.
Yeah. Well, Virginia, I mean, you know, I was talking to a man about it again. Like, we've got a governor's race coming up this year, statewide elections. Governor Glenn Youngkin vetoed something like 24 gun control bills this year. And we've got a Democratic candidate for governor who says, I'll sign every one of them. You know, that's what's at stake. We are seeing, you're right, you know, not just efforts at the federal level, but at the state level, at the local level. And I got to say, one of the things that I've been really pleased to see over the last, you know, let's say the last year or so, is that the NRA is working with a lot of other organizations. So you're seeing the NRA not just get involved with like the California Rifle and Pistol Association, but they're teaming up with the Second Amendment Foundation. They're teaming up with Firearms Policy Coalition to file lawsuits and to challenge some of these laws. And I think that's great to see because to me, the 2A community, everybody does things a little bit differently. But when, again, we can come together, whether it's as NRA members or as this coalition of Second Amendment organizations, I think that's when we can really be the most effective.
We have to partner. That is my goal for next year, is establish strategic relationships that we work together. And they all can't do it on their own. But when we go into Congress, when we go into a state legislature and we're all working together and we're singing from the same page, they know that translates to votes. All right. I mean, we elected President Trump 3 times as president. We're going to elect him a 4th time. So we need to all work together. And that's the key. And that's something that I'm working on. I've got a meeting tomorrow with a major organization to try to come out. We worked last year extremely well together. So let's take the informal relationship, make it a formal relationship. And it's a win-win. And, you know, maybe all their members are our members and all our members are their members. And we work together because we all have the same goal, right? And we're all trying to pull from the same pot and there's just not enough money in that pot. But, you know, what John Comerford's done in ILA and working with those other organizations is phenomenal. And it's a new thinking at NRA. There's just a new enthusiasm coming out with Doug at the helm there and what we're doing at the board level. I think you're going to see a lot of great things.
All right. I gotta drill down a little bit on what you just talked about here. I don't expect you to name names because I know you're not going to get ahead of yourself. But when do you think we might learn about any sort of formal partnership with one of these other organizations? What is your goal in terms of timing for that?
If elections go Monday as we hope they go,
yeah,
I think we could have some things in less than 2 months.
Okay.
I really do. I mean, there's logistics that have to be worked out. You know, there's a lot of behind the scenes. You could do a memorandum of understanding. And, you know, when you have something formal in writing, it's a lot more powerful than just a handshake.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd rather have it documented what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And it's just going to enthuse the other organizations. I mean, we have so many great conservation organizations out there. And they're small. They may only have 10,000, 20,000, 50,000. But what we do in the at Capitol Hill and at the state levels, we can represent them too. It's no more extra work that says, okay, there's a great quail bill, there's a great ruffed grouse bill, you know, or we can protect conservation for them too.
Right.
That we're all working again together. We're all hunters. We're all shooters. We're all defenders of the Second Amendment.
Absolutely. All right, last question. You mentioned the board elections on Monday. Who is up? What positions are going to be open? Or what positions are going to be voted on?
Every year, the position of president, first vice president, second vice president are voted on. Typically, it's a two-year term, and then you move off that, and you move up if you're in one of the lower officer positions. And then we typically reelect a chief executive officer, executive vice president, which will be Doug Hamlin. And I think we elect the treasurer, or he nominates and elects the treasurer. So there's really four major positions of the three officers: president, first vice president, second vice president, and the CEO.
Okay. Now, you say that this is typically a two-year term,
right? I'm running for president.
You're running for, that's where I was going with that. So you were elected first vice president last year.
Correct.
And now you're running for president of the NRA.
Yes.
What made you decide that you wanted to do that? Do you feel like you need to do that?
A couple of weeks ago, we were looking at keeping the current slate.
Yeah.
But I like to listen. And I'm listening to the grassroots. I'm listening to the donors. I'm listening to the members. They really want a clean slate of leadership. We need to do a lot of change from a business perspective. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the history of NRA, we've had great presidents. We had great leadership at certain thresholds of time, right? Charlton Heston came in. You can go back in history. And we need to transition now from the legal days to business leadership. So the slate that's running are three accomplished business leaders that'll bring a business perspective to the organization.
Okay. So you're running as part of a slate.
Yes.
Then. Okay. So you are running for president. Who on this slate is running for first and vice president?
Mark Vaughn's running for first vice president.
Okay.
And Rocky Marshall's running for second vice president.
Okay. All right.
And I'm excited. Mark and I have worked very closely as first and second vice president. We've worked together. We temper each other. We're both business leaders, change agents ourselves.
Right.
And we balance very well with Doug. And Rocky will be a great addition to it. He's helped do a lot of major changes in our organizations.
Yeah.
He's got great ideas. And he's got we've been talking about these things called KPIs lately, key performance indicators, mm-hmm. and we need to look at how we're doing and what we're doing, right? We got to report back, because if you can't see what you're doing, you can't fix things, right? And we've come through six really hard years.
Yeah.
And, and Jim Wallace, who's one of our board members, said while they were fighting the legal fight, we watched our village burn down. Meaning headquarters. And, Trump didn't go into a cocoon and stop communicating and stop talking. He went out there and fought.
Right.
Right. We should have done the same thing. We should have been out on the front line and been saying, yes, this is true. Yes, the jackets were unacceptable. Yes, the travel was unacceptable. Let's move on. Let's fix the problem. But there was denial of that. And that's what really, I think, aggravated our members. So, we got to own up to it, okay? Mistakes were made. We got to fix them. We got to show the transparency that they're fixed. And that's one of my goals. I've got a vision for the organization. I'll bring that out on Monday of what I believe the future of the organization needs to go. Because as a leader, you need to have a vision. And I'm confident of that.
Well, I will say that, as a journalist, I guess I'm supposed to be fair and impartial, but as an NRA Benefactor Life member, I have my opinion. I have been on the side of those folks who have been trying to reform the organization. And so I want to say I wish you and the other reform members on that slate the best of luck.
We're the Patriots. We like to refer to ourselves as the Patriots. But it shouldn't be that way. I mean, I believe we will mostly all come together. because we're there for the good of the organization. And, you know, other board members feel the organization hasn't done in their areas of interest, mm-hmm. right? I mean, the competitive shooting area.
Right.
Right. I mean, that we owned. I mean, what was NRA founded on? Marksmanship. And I brought this up last night at the Golden Jacket dinner. I addressed that group. And I asked them, does anyone know how many Union soldier shots it took to hit a Confederate?
It was a lot. I know it was a lot. Was it eight? Was it a nine? Ooh, 12? 17.
Official records.
Yeah.
Official records. 1,000. And someone last night said there was over 30 million shots shot at Gettysburg. So, you know, granted the guns weren't as accurate back then.
Right.
But 1,000, the Confederates were such better shots because they grew up on the farm. They were rural. Right. I grew up on a farm. I was a good shot just naturally because we hunted groundhogs. We went pheasant hunting. We went duck hunting. So, you know, you grew up around it. But when you take somebody out of the city that's never touched a gun before, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, I was a city and suburban kid, moved to a farm 12 years ago, and you'll probably like this story. My late wife would actually plunk groundhogs from the bathroom window because I was the best shot in the backyard. She would sit there with her Henry and take out the groundhogs. So
I did it from our kitchen window. My wife wasn't happy. I mean, my mom wasn't happy, right? Little 222 over and under with a 20-gauge shotgun on the bottom.
There you go. There you go. Well, listen, Bill, I really do appreciate you spending a couple of minutes with us. I know that you are very busy this weekend, but I am looking forward to seeing what the future of the NRA is. And again, with these patriots on hand, the folks who want to right the ship and lead this NRA into a strong future. I wish you the very best of luck.
Well, thank you. I'm here to listen. If anyone has suggestions, we don't know it all. Please give us great ideas. Help us raise money. Help us be a more effective organization. So thank you, Cam, for everything.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good talking to you.